Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio.
Happy Advent, everyone, here on the 7th of December on Faith Radio Mornings. It's delightful to be with you wherever you are listening this morning, whether it's through the terrestrial radio around the Midwest or you're streaming live through our app all around the country. It is great to be celebrating with sisters and brothers as we're following Jesus together. Just a reminder again that we are always part of a kingdom that knows no end. So the troubles of our day are, as Paul would say, light and momentary, however real they are, and often they are very real, but they are light and momentary compared to the eternal weight of glory, the call that is in front of us, the season we're a part of, and the king of a kingdom that knows no end. I love being part of it with you. I'm the host of the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by Rachel Sutton. And if you've been listening, she's been on point all week as we've been asking our guests what their favorite Christmas song is. We certainly would love to hear from you and have been hearing from you about what your favorite Christmas song might be as well, so we can play these things in and out of a break. And so at any time this morning, you want to call in or text the studio at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. We would love to hear from you, and we will absolutely play your favorite Christmas song. And of course, Friday mornings here on Faith Radio means that Adam Holtz of PluggedIn.com joins us. And we'd love to bring Adam a little bit early and ask us some of these questions of him as well. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Peter.
So you have a favorite Christmas song, Adam, that you celebrate, whether you or your family, and just think, when this one comes on, this is the one for me.
You know, I have always loved Carol of the Bells, and in recent years I'm particularly partial to Trans-Siberian Orchestra's rocking out take on that. So my family and I were big Trans-Siberian Orchestra fans, and we've been the last 3 years. They go on tour every Christmas season. So that would probably be my pick.
Well, Rachel Sutton here in studio is cheering, actually, for your pick, Adam. You clearly have chosen something a little bit more off the beaten trail and something that apparently she approves of here.
Well, you know, I am to please.
Love your work on PluggedIn.com. I know when we come back from break in just a minute, Adam, we'll start reviewing some of the movies of the season, including Ben is Back, that sees the return of Julia Roberts to the big screen. And we'll talk a little bit about some of the video games coming out, too, including Red Dead Redemption 2. I know you and I have chatted about that before, but, boy, it seems to be what everybody is talking about. So looking forward to our segment with Adam Holtz next on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here for the 7th of December. It's Friday morning at this time. We always chat with Adam Holtz, who does such a great job reviewing movies and television shows and video games for us as families, whether we're parents or grandparents. I always recommend going to PluggedIn.com to see the authoritative and in-depth reviews of Adam Holtz. So again, thanks for joining us as you do, Adam.
Oh, Peter, you're pouring it on thick this morning, so thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Must feel a bit like molasses for you, huh, Adam, when we pour it on that thick?
I would be remiss if I didn't say I'm part of a terrific team, so it's not just me reviewing stuff. But we have a team of five, and everybody is involved with all the things we review. So I do see movies and write reviews, but I'm also the editor, too, and I'm very aware that my team is incredibly talented, so it's a privilege to be a part of it.
Yeah, it really is a great team that you have there, Adam. We certainly love reading it. Even our kids can read the reviews. It's a fabulous place to go. And I see that there might be a little lull in some of these holiday releases. I did go see Crimes of Grindelwald after you had reviewed it, and we saw it while we were on vacation, and kind of one of those bigger name movies. But for this week, there's not a lot to say other than perhaps Ben is Back. We see the return of Julia Roberts. I don't remember the last time I saw her in a movie, Adam. Maybe Ocean's 11 or something along those lines. What do we see in this movie?
It's been a while, and I know she's in a new TV series, too, that on Netflix, I believe, or perhaps Amazon. Anyway, she's back on the big screen, and she brings all of her Julia Roberts megawatt power to this role. And, you know, as she has gotten a little bit older, It's all relative. She, you know, being about her age, she doesn't seem too old to me. She has been doing more motherly kind of roles. We saw that in Wonder a couple of years ago. And in this one, she plays the mom of a young man played by Lucas Hedges, who is an addict, and he has been in recovery for opioid abuse, and he has been in an inpatient kind of setting, and he gets out for Christmas and comes back. And she is hoping the best for him. He is hoping the best for him. And the rest of the family knows that it's only a matter of time before his addiction and addictive behaviors kick in and really do damage. And so this is a gritty R-rated movie about the reality of how opioid addiction destroys people's lives. It's rated R mostly for language. There's a fair bit of language, and that's really the biggest content concern here. And obviously, you know, the drug references and allusions to, you know, the fact that this young man is addicted to this. And so, you know, every now and then a movie comes along that earns an R rating. But depending on your tolerance for, you know, language content, it could still really be a movie that would be redemptive and if not encouraging, certainly something that could provoke conversation if this is an issue in your family or with somebody you know. So I'm going to stop short of recommending it. It's a really, really well-done movie and could be involved in the Oscar conversations as we move closer to awards season. But again, it is an R-rated film, and there's a lot of language here. So if that's a deal-killer issue for you, this is probably one you're not going to be interested in.
When you reference the opioids, and of course that has been a major crisis in our country, and it's just tearing apart communities, are there some avenues in which you can engage with your kids around some of these topics based on the movie?
You know, this is not a movie for teens. It might be a movie for older teens, you know, 17, 18, who perhaps have had friends deal with that. We have some friends who've had children that have been very involved in drug use, unfortunately. And so, but I think that there are better ways perhaps just to talk about the reality that in our culture today, it's perhaps never been easier to get a hold of things to try to make you feel better. And so I think that the bigger issue for parents is how do we talk about our kids about the things that we're choosing to try to help us cope with life, and drugs is definitely in the mix there. And so, again, for older teens, maybe it would be a conversation starter. For younger ones, I think there are better ways to go about it.
Well, it certainly looks like another movie coming out here that is even darker than what you just described is The Possession of Hannah Grace. I'm guessing it's going to get some feedback from teens that are going to want to see this, but boy, it sounds like this one really heads in some difficult places.
Yeah, and you know, it's bad enough when you get possessed, but when you get killed during the exorcism, you go to the morgue and then you wake up and you're still possessed, man, that's just a bad day all the way around, Peter. And it's a bad day, too, if you're the morgue worker who works there, and The Possession of Hannah Grace is about a graveyard shift morgue worker who, that's weird, it looks like the corpse moved just now. That's weird. It looks like the corpse's wounds are healing. That's weird. Hey, where's the corpse? You know, that's the kind of movie that this is. And so it's a grotesque, violent, nasty movie, and one that really says that Satan's power is stronger than God's. So the spiritual takeaway alone would be a reason to give this one a miss. But, you know, sometimes we see these movies and they really raise thoughtful questions about the reality of the spiritual world. You know, I think every now and then that happens. This is not one of those movies, so we don't need to waste too much time thinking about this one either.
So it sounds like it's not even a Netflix kind of movie you'd want to watch for free at home.
No, it's not the kind of movie you want to see. If you want to see a movie about possession, Scott Derrickson's movie from about 10 years ago, The Possession of Emily Rose, chronicles a real-life case of possession, and Scott Derrickson is a Christian. And so it's a movie that definitely comes at this issue with a much more grounded Christian worldview. But again, if you want to see a movie about possession, maybe we should all stop and consider if that's what we should be really wanting to watch at all.
Absolutely. We're talking with Adam Holtz this morning from PluggedIn.com. Some of the movies coming out that are at least out for this week and sort of a lull between the two holiday seasons. Are you anticipating anything in the next few weeks, Adam, some big releases of movies that we're looking forward to?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of stuff coming in the next couple of weeks. You know, I think probably the top of the list is Mary Poppins Returns, which we have seen, but I'm forbidden to talk about just yet. The studios get kind of nervous about saying things too early. So that comes out, I think, either the week of or the week before Christmas. I don't have that release date firmly in my brain, but definitely be looking for that review. That one's probably the top of my list right now, Peter.
Well, I'm going to try to shower you with compliments during the break coming up here, Adam, and see if I can pull out some information about this Mary Poppins movie from you off the record.
Okay, sounds good.
We'll take a short break when we come back with more from Adam Holtz. We'll get into some of the video game conversation, including Pokemon and Red Dead Redemption and what we can expect to see if we're going to enter into these video games. So lots more to come with Adam Holtz from PluggedIn.com. So there you go, Adam. There's a little Trans-Siberian Orchestra for you this morning. Part of your favorite Christmas music, right?
I love it. I'm sitting in my chair rocking out.
Thanks for joining us as you do here on Fridays. I know that there's a TV show we could talk about a little bit here in terms of what it could mean for watching as families or not so much, and it's the TV series The Rookie. Tell us about what's happening here.
You know, there are two types of shows at least, well, three, that it seems like Hollywood never gets tired of producing. There are legal, procedural shows, hospital shows, and police shows. I mean, you can think back over the last 50 years, and at any given time, one of those kinds of shows is really getting prominence. And so The Rookie is a new police-oriented show, and it's on ABC. And, you know, the trends we've seen on TV these days are everything is more graphic, more content. A lot of times really angry and or progressive worldviews sneak in that just, for a lot of us, it's just like, oh, can we just leave the politics out? I'm really happy to report that, for the most part, that stuff is not here. This is just a pretty straightforward show about a guy who's 40 and decides to become a police officer. And so there are the tensions that come from those who wonder, you know, do you have what it takes to really do this tough job at the age of 40? And there's a little bit of language here and there, and, you know, a little bit of sexual innuendo, as you would expect. But honestly, this is as TV goes in 2018, this is a pretty good show. And it depicts being a police officer as a difficult job, a necessary job, and one that really is worthy of respect, which, given some of the publicity that we have seen about police officers the last 4 or 5 years, it's refreshing to me that ABC would put out a really unambiguously earnest, positive police drama. So it's definitely worth checking out our whole review if you are interested in that, and you can take a look at what we have to say about it.
It's great. Transitioning to video games then, I see that we have some reviews on Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu. Adam, I've got to admit, when my kids ask me to sit down and play Pokemon, I think it is the most confusing game I've ever played. I never know, you know, the energy boosters and the fire boosters and the characters and the attributes and all of that. Is the video game any easier to play and worth looking at?
You know, the video game is a lot of fun, and I'll confess that my son and I are big Pokemon fans, and I resisted for years because I knew it would be a bottomless money pit with the cards and the games, and it has proven to be that. Basically, this is about a guy who has Pokemon, which, if you're not familiar, that's short for pocket monsters. It's actually a contraction. And these little creatures, you capture them, and you battle against other people who have them, and they never die. They just faint at the end of battle, so there's no death here. And it's very cartoony and kiddie, and it's pretty fun. I think that the biggest issue with the Pokemon franchise in general is you've got just a smattering of Eastern spirituality that sometimes creeps into the mix, but it's not overpowering, and at least in our family, we've decided that this is a navigable worldview issue, and so it's given us a chance to talk about what we believe and why, and what this particular franchise has to say. But this is a series that is aimed at capitalizing on the huge explosion from Pokemon Go, which has been a mobile app the last 2.5 years. And so it actually enables you to move characters between that phone app and the Nintendo Switch, which is the console that Let's Go Eevee and Let's Go Pikachu are designed for. So it's a fun game. It doesn't have much content to deal with. Like most video games these days, it's very well designed. And so the biggest issue for parents may be the one of addiction and setting limits on it. So, you know, I know my son, if left to his own devices, literally, he would probably play Pokemon Go or Let's Go Eevee 12 hours a day. So we have to say, okay, bud, you've got a certain amount of time, and then we're going to do something else. We're going to do some reading. We're going to go take a walk. We're going to do something active that's not screen-based. And so that's probably the biggest challenge here.
We saw Ralph Breaks the Internet as a family last week and absolutely loved the movie. And one of the things that I noted from that is when one of the main characters, Vanellope, finds herself in a new internet-based video game world, is what she's compelled by is all the possibilities. There isn't anything hemming her in anymore. Yeah. And that's sort of the trend we're seeing in some of these video games. Is that true of Pokemon, the Pikachu, that there's sort of this endless world of exploration? I remember playing video games, Adam, and there was an end to them at some point.
With Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee, it actually is pretty closed-ended. I mean, my son beat the game. I mean, he beat all the main challenges in about 4 days. And he's now going back and, you know, doing side challenges and that sort of thing. So as that one goes, it's not as open-ended as some. But definitely open-world games or sandbox games, as they're called sometimes, are the thing right now, and especially when you throw in an online component where you're playing against other people, yeah, it can go, functionally it can be limitless. You can just keep playing and keep playing. And so that's definitely something that we're seeing more and more of and something that parents need to keep in mind.
Is that part of what we see in Red Dead Redemption 2 as well? Is there a point to the game? Certainly it's gotten some pretty widespread acclaim in terms of its popularity at this point.
Yeah, the sales on this have been staggering. I think it's the second biggest video game release of all time, and it made $725 million in its first 3 days. I mean, when you think about a movie, you know, getting publicity for making $150 or $200 million, you know, this thing made four times that much, and it sold 17 million copies in about the first week or so. So there was a huge appetite for this game. It's from Rockstar Games. It's the same company that has done the Grand Theft Auto franchise. And both of these are open-world games with there is a story, but there's also lots of stuff that you can go off and explore. And in this one, it's basically a seriously R-rated or M-rated, as they say, M for mature in video games, take on the Old West. And so pretty much anything bad you could think about happening in the Old West can happen in this game. You know, you've got brothels, you've got drinking, you've got violence, you've got profanity. In terms of M-rated content, this one pretty much checks all of the boxes. It's visually a really striking game. Rockstar knows how to make games. There's a reason why 17 million people bought this. Stepping away from a morality filter, it's a very engaging game. It's well done. But again, all of those things draw you into a world that is just drenched in content. And so, you know, this is one that I think really is one to steer away from. And as your family, if you have a young player who's interested in this, trying to steer them towards something with a more restrictive rating, something that's T-rated, I think we'll pay dividends here because this is graphic. It's extreme. And I think there still may be parents out there who don't realize that video games these days can be just as graphic and explicit as the worst thing we'll see in a movie. You know, you've got nudity, sexual content, violence, harsh profanity, and that's definitely true of this game.
And certainly, we have about a minute left here, Adam, but certainly you've talked about it in the past in the show that these video games are so immersive, and for so many hours, you can easily spend 100 hours exploring the world of a video game versus 2 hours of a movie. So there really is a significant difference between games and movies on this.
No, and you're actively participating in something as opposed to just passively observing it. And I think that there's a desensitization factor, and research has shown that, especially with these violent games, when you are an active participant in even virtually killing other people, that does something to our souls. And, you know, the kids will say, oh, Ma, Dad, it's just a game. You don't need to worry about it. But there's research out there that shows that it may not turn your kid into a school shooter, but it blunts empathy, and it can really enhance or increase aggressiveness. So a lack of empathy and increased aggression are two of the things that researchers have consistently noted with this kind of game. And, man, I don't know about you, Peter, but I think the world is aggressive enough, and there's already enough lack of empathy. That's not something that we need to contribute to with the video games our families are engaged in.
Yeah, I think that's well said, Adam. And I just appreciate the wisdom you bring each week into the program, you and your team, all the reviews you do at PluggedIn.com. So have a great weekend, Adam, and look forward to chatting again next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, Peter.
We'll head into break this morning. We've been playing Christmas music all week, some of the favorite songs of our guests, some of the favorite songs of our listeners. And for this morning, we have a listener writing in saying that Christmas is not Christmas until we hear the Hallelujah chorus from Handel's Messiah.
Hallelujah, 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 hallelujah.
Grateful to Breakpoint for reminding us about Pearl Harbor and just sort of the sobering impact that had on our country. Great topic of conversation we can have as families. Appreciate also a listener text here this morning who is a mail carrier in the western suburbs of Minneapolis, reminding us that there are a lot of post offices that are shorthanded this time of year. So as people that are expecting our packages and letters, she wanted to say, just let people know we're doing our best with the extra large volume. Mail probably won't be to the mailbox at the same time as the rest of the year, and please drive carefully when you see us after dark trying to deliver. Thank you for all your service carrying so many mail items of mail and packages at this time of year as we're getting things delivered during the holiday season.
Sweet little Jesus boy, they made you be born in a manger. Sweet little holy child, we didn't know who you were. Didn't know you'd come to save us, Lord, to take us.
Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, we were joined by author and pediatrician Scott James, who was talking with us about Advent and the perspective of remembering both Jesus' first and his second coming.
It's a really multifaceted approach to this holiday season. And one of the things I appreciate the most about it is the look forward to the second advent. So the first advent of Christ, his incarnation, when he came as a baby in the manger, helps us look forward to his second advent by it just helps us think back on Advent. It's a remembrance, and it's also a prophecy. It's something we look back upon that Christ has accomplished. God has fulfilled his promises. He said, after all those generations, he said, the Savior will come, the Savior will come, the Savior will come. God's people waited generation after generation, and God was true to his word. He came through on his promise, and so that's a proven track record. And so now we sit with prophecy still yet to come. Jesus said, where I'm going, I'll prepare a place for you, that when I come again, you may come with me. So Jesus says, I'm coming back for you.
Scott's the author of a new book called The Littlest Watchman. It's a great book for young people and ways in which we can engage our children during this Advent season to help them understand what we're really waiting for with the advent of our King. If you want to catch that entire segment, you can head to myfaithradio.com and search for Scott James or for Advent and hear all of what he had to say during our 15 minutes together. Well, I've already been chatting with Chris Martin, who is a regular contributor to Faith Radio Mornings from a millennial perspective, and we're going to start our conversation next in just a moment about how Tumblr on the social media site has decided to delete all porn.
the time kids get to high school, they're not quick to offer details about their life. Mom and dad wonders, how was your day? And the response is often a grunt and a one-word answer. Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. Mom, dad, don't expect to know everything that happens in your child's life. I mean, did you tell your mom and dad everything that happened to you during high school? Nope. There's always a balance, of course. On one hand, we need to be aware that our kids are inflicted with occasional pain and loss outside our home. But on the other hand, we can allow our teens some healthy independence by staying out of their private business. Your son or daughter may give you a one-word answer, but be patient, and above all, stay engaged in relationship.
Looking for more parenting wisdom? Go online to ParentingTodaysTeens.org or search for Parenting Today's Teens in your favorite app store.
Top of the hour here on the 7th of December, and we are chatting now and next with Chris Martin, who is a youth pastor, also has done a lot of writing over the years from the millennial perspective, thinking about our faith as it moves into the next generation. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well. Always great to have you on the program, and we have been asking all of our guests throughout this week for what their favorite Christmas song might be. So, Chris, this time of year, it's Advent and getting ready to celebrate the birth of our King. Do you have a favorite Christmas song to share with us?
I do. So I love that you're asking me this question, because right after Thanksgiving, when we were coming home, I had an idea. I was like, okay, I have this question I want to propose to my friends on social media, and the question I asked was, you know, pretend the Grinch has stolen all Christmas music from the world, and he's given you one credit that you can buy back one Christmas song. That's the only Christmas song you can listen to for the rest of your life. The song and artist, who would you choose? And mine is Silent Night by Bing Crosby. That's mine.
I love it, Chris. That's great. Do you have a favorite verse within Silent Night? Because Rachel Sutton, our producer, has been on point all week. So we want to get the right segment out of Silent Night for you here this morning.
Sure. I think the first verse is just always, but just, you know, because sometimes when you're singing it, whether you're caroling it or you're singing it in church or whatever, some people don't always go to the later verses, though they're great. It's just always that first verse that really kind of captures Christmas for me.
Love it. Well, it calls to mind my German class in high school. We learned that one, Stille Nacht, German, Chris, right? Have you ever sang it in the German version?
I've not sang it in the German version, except when I'm singing along with the Muppets and John Denver Christmas album, in which case I do, yeah.
Love it. That's a great reference. We definitely play that one throughout our Christmas time. It's Chris Martin. You know his voice. He joins us regularly here on Faith Radio Mornings. And Chris, I see that Tumblr, the social media site, has decided to delete all pornography from its site. Tell us a little bit more about what's going on there.
Sure. So a lot of your listeners may not really know what Tumblr is, or have only heard of it in passing. And once upon a time, back when I was in high school, maybe about 9-10 years ago, I really wanted Tumblr to succeed. It was kind of new to the scene then. It's what's called a microblogging platform, which is also what Twitter is called, but they're not nearly the same. It's much more like a traditional blogging platform. It's always been more open to sharing multimedia. So on a traditional blog, like a WordPress blog, it's more directing you to like writing, you know, like news articles or blog posts like I've always done. But Tumblr always encourages users to write or maybe share a video or just share an image with a caption. Tumblr has always kind of pushed its users to share various kinds of media, text, video, images, GIFs, and otherwise. And so, Tumblr has decided, but it never really got mainstream. So it's always been very popular. In fact, I think it's owned by Yahoo at this point. It's always been very popular, but it never really got mainstream from a social media perspective. It's always been very niche and very unique. And honestly, kind of vulgar and not safe for work, as you might say. And not the whole platform, but it's always just kind of been an anything goes kind of platform. And so, the fact that it's decided that it will delete all porn from its platform is massive. And a lot of people have been saying like, rip Tumblr, because it may very well kill the platform, because so many of its most devoted users have been using it, sometimes for what we would call porn, but also for what we would call just erotic content in general. Some people just like writing like fan fiction for various like, you know, like alternate fan stories for famous novels or things like that. It's often been a hub for that kind of thing, which is part of why it didn't get mainstream. But as you can imagine, a lot of people are into that sort of content. So it's really thrived in that sort of niche market. And so what's interesting and what's going to be interesting to watch moving forward is, can Tumblr survive a massive change that we would look at and say, okay, this is good. The more we can get rid of this stuff on the internet, especially from a mainstream site kind of like Tumblr, the better. But will Tumblr survive a move that will alienate a significant amount of its most active user base? And this comes because the Tumblr app was rejected from this is what's perhaps most interesting about the whole topic. The reason Tumblr is deleting all porn from its platform is not because it suddenly grew a conscience. It's because the app was rejected by Apple in its App Store to be able to be updated and downloaded from the App Store to Apple iPhones because of the suggestive content within the app that's so pervasive in the app. So because Tumblr, basically Apple is a gatekeeper for a lot of things, right? Apple, like so many other big companies, Google and otherwise, kind of decide what is and is not okay on the internet from a moral perspective simply by the decisions they make on what they allow on their platforms. And so when Apple says, we're not going to let people download your app anymore unless you clean it up, Tumblr kind of has – they're stuck between a rock and a hard place, I guess you could say. They either get rid of porn, which – is a negative move for them and their user base because it's going to alienate many of their most active users, or they don't allow their app to be downloaded on an iPhone, which is an equally problematic move for them from a business perspective. So they ultimately decided to take this move, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens to the platform moving forward as a result.
Wow, what an incredible story that a company might go out of business because it is deciding that it's not going to show porn on its site because that was the pervasive revenue-generating way in which it was surviving.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it ultimately, it first came because some child pornography was discovered on the site, which obviously they have an issue with. They're not going to allow that even no matter what Apple says. And so that led to the deeper issue of, okay, maybe we have too much, maybe we have too much problematic content on our site in general. Do we need to evaluate this moving forward if we're going to be allowed to be on Apple or eventually Android phones, et cetera? So yeah, it's really interesting to see what's going to happen here. Like I said, from a functionality standpoint, I always wanted Tumblr to survive and thrive because I loved how they encouraged people to create content. Unfortunately, that was diverted into a sort of niche market now that they're now having to reckon with.
Talking with Chris Martin this morning. And Chris, when we come back from break, I change the conversation a little bit into some gender-based pronouns and how Google is handling this as part of their new artificial intelligence that's embedded into some of our email that finishes our sentences for us or at least offers suggestions, and that they're avoiding any kind of pronoun use in that for fear of offending people. So fascinating conversation next with Chris Martin.
Silent night, holy night, all is calm, all is bright.
Well, there you go, Chris. There's a little Bing Crosby in Silent Night. I got to tell you that you had the terribly competent Rachel Sutton and Paul Perreault racing around in the last segment trying to find this on YouTube and getting it embedded in. So well done causing them to sort of scatter around here this morning in the studio.
That's amazing. Well, thank you for that. That was a very nice welcome back into the segment, and I'm very thankful for that. So that's great.
I love it. Well, I know one of the articles that we can talk about this morning has to do with Google's new artificial intelligence that they've embedded into their email platforms. And I know one of the universities where I teach, Chris, that there's an update done to Gmail, and then the next thing I know, I'm typing out messages, and there's all of these sort of shadowed words that are possibilities of how I should finish that sentence. I've got to admit, it drives me nuts at this point. Even if I get it right, I don't even know how to make it happen within my email. Can I shut off this artificial intelligence in my Gmail, Chris?
You absolutely can, because I feel the same way you did, and I've already shut it off. It was turned on. It's a feature, I guess you could say. I was hoping it was a glitch. It's a feature that they turned on in May called Smart Compose. Smart Compose is an AI technology that automatically suggests ways to complete sentences for users as they type. So in the Gmail product. So this is I think it's kind of cool that this technology exists. Like, oh, man, that's kind of cool that they figured out a way to do it. And then I hated actually using it. I mean, it's accurate. It's not like it was like, you know, it's not like I was typing half of a question and then it gave me some random second half of the question. I mean, it's not like the early days of voice activated technology or whatever, but it is kind of annoying when it's like you feel like, wait, no, I don't want to say that. And then you hit enter on accident and then it puts it there and then you got to go back and delete. Anyway, it's not a fun feature. So you definitely can go in and delete that or turn that off. But they've caught some controversy on the front end because they have made clear that they are not in the way they're finishing sentences. They're not going to assume the gender of the person that you're emailing back. So one of the features is, you know, like a Google product manager was typing an email and he said, I'm meeting with an investor next week. And Smart Compose suggests a possible follow-up question. Do you want to meet with him instead of her? And so part of what they want to do, Google being the organization that it is, they want to make sure that the text that they're auto-filling with their AI technology is not excluding people, but is being as inclusive as possible. So I think especially in the environment that we have today where there's a lot of emphasis on women promotion in the workplace, equal pay for women, things like that, I think when it could be problematic when you have someone typing, hey, I'm meeting with the president of this company next week, and then Google assumes that it's a him or a her without necessarily knowing, you know, who the president of that company is. That could be a problem and could generate some bad PR for them. So I think what they're trying to do is to take a neutral approach and not and to step on as few toes as possible, which as a company that's trying to make money, I think makes sense. And I think it's important to understand the context of what they're trying to do because of the ways that their AI has failed them in the past. So what this shouldn't be taken as, oh, Google's just trying to not hurt like Snowflake's feelings or something like that, or they're just trying to be nice or not be offensive. Yeah, sure. I think that's probably part of it, especially because we know Google is such a progressive organization. However, in 2015, Google's image recognition feature from its photo service labeled a black couple as gorillas. That's a problem.
Big problem.
In 2016, the company was forced to change its search engine's autocomplete. So they've had autocomplete in search for a long time. They've just kind of added that to Gmail. Their search engine's autocomplete function suggested the anti-Semitic query, "Are Jews evil?" when users sought information about Jews. So Google has had AI autocomplete problems or AI information problems in the past by perhaps assuming things or trying to give their AI too much information or trying to make it maybe too smart. And I think probably what they're trying to do here, more than just not offend people, is to just assume as little as possible to maybe be a little less accurate and let you fill in the blanks on things that could be potentially problematic if they were to assume one thing or another.
Well, it's fascinating stuff, Chris. I love it. And I'll probably have to text you later for a tutorial about how to shut that thing off my Gmail. So thanks for joining us as you do on Faith Radio Mornings. I love these conversations. I just don't get this information from anybody else.
Sure. Hey, I'm happy to join. You guys have a great week.
Yeah, you too. We'll take a break here and wrap up our show for this week. And happy Advent again, everyone who is listening. Paul, Rachel, great job all week finding this music. I know, Paul, that you were scrambling in the YouTube situation to find Chris Martin's song.
Well, yeah, it wasn't that hard. I just used Bing.
Oh, what a way to end the week on that one. Hey, thanks for listening, everyone, to Faith Radio Mornings. We certainly are enjoying Advent with all of you. Have a great weekend, and we'll catch you on Monday. Continue the Christmas songs.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.